Now on this new earth, he's populating everything with Jews, because he promised the new earth to the Jews over in Isaiah 54. So they're doing just exactly what Adam was told to do. Right? Now, are their children being born with a perfect, sinless nature? Are they going to be born with no ability to sin? How's it going to work?
Get into somewhere else.
Last your finger. Did you solve it?
No.
Where were you? Isaiah 66? New heaven and new earth, yeah. One new moon to another, one Sabbath to another, and I shall cause all flesh to come and worship before me and move it out without me. That's the Lord. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Have you got it now?
Yeah, I got a song. I think I do.
I make four.
How long did you work on it last night?
About
an hour. Okay. Well, you know, here's the interpretation for this class. Is man going to be created with a perfect nature?
No.
He's going to be created with exactly the same kind of nature that Adam was. Exactly. The whole thing goes in a circle. He is going to be perfect, but untested. Perfect, but untested. All right, now, every individual will have an opportunity to be tested. And it's rather obvious from verse 8 that some are going to fail the test. Isn't that right? Just like Adam failed the test. Some are going to fail the test. However, they may fail the test for other reasons than Adam did, but nonetheless, but they're fearful. Believe me, the abominable, the murderers, the whoremongers, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars. So have their part in the lake which burned the fire and brimstone, which is Satan. Now, a lot of people quote this verse and try to make that apply in this age. You're a liar, you're going to go to hell. Wait a minute. You can't lift a verse that's in the middle of eternity out and put it in the church age. This is an eternity right here. New heaven and a new earth. So the idea of the thing is that God is going to deal with wickedness and rebellion through all of eternity. The only difference between Genesis and eternity is that by the time we get to eternity, God's already got a whole host of people doing what he's commanded them to do. So, one or two more or less ain't going to make any difference. You rebel against God. Out you go. Out you go. Whether it be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth in outer darkness.
You mean if I go to eternity, that I can still go to...
Not you.
No.
not you. You're part of the body. The body's not severed.
So we just go that we're born.
There's going to be people born in eternity
with a physical flesh and nature, just like you and I got right now.
Yes.
What happens to those that are killed? They include murderers in the list in verse 8, but I think somebody was killed.
Yeah, somebody's going to get killed. Evidently, they're going to have some kind of a resurrection. And I haven't figured it out, but I'll tell you where you could figure it out. If you want to figure it out, you'll find the answer in the cities of refuge. That's where you'll find the answer. I haven't figured it out, but it's there. All right, yes. Yeah? Now, what was he talking about when he said no marriage? He's talking about people, number one, with a resurrected body in heaven. We're not talking about people with resurrected bodies. We're talking about earthbound people.
Earth, no more. We're talking about
yeah. Yeah, we're talking about... let's go back. Let's have a mini course in dispensational truth for a minute here. What's God's whole plan? Or what's God doing? What's this thing all about? Are we just kind of floating around and this is going to happen, and the tribulation is going to happen, the millennium is going to happen, and then all of a sudden the new earth and new heaven are going to be here, and then it's just kind of, who knows, who's guess? What's going on, man?
What's the population?
Exactly. Isaiah chapter 45 and verse 18. God's plan and purpose is to populate the heavens and the earth. That's what he's going to do. What does God's plan do right here? What did he say to Adam? He said, now you be fruitful and multiply and replenish the face of the earth. God wanted to fill the thing up. Now just thinking in the realm of supposition for a moment. Let's suppose that Adam had not fallen, and Adam had been faithful to that admonition. And Eve had about 190 kids, and they all had 190 each, and it went, and pretty soon before long, they're like money rabbits in Australia. They're everywhere. What then? God created the universe for his glory, and according to Isaiah 45, he created it with a concept in mind of being inhabited. Now you find that in the Davidic covenant. How so? The increase of his government. You got the end of his kingdom there shall be no end. Kingdom. Wait a minute. Kingdom? You see, to have a kingdom, you got to have subjects. The king is not a king unless he's got someone to king over. Isn't that right? You see, he's got to be kingly. He's got to have some subjects. He's got to have someone to rule over. Of his kingdom there shall be no end. Here's where I got this thing figured. Now, I might be haywire, but this way I got to fix it. So, you got a sea up here. The sea that the Leviathan, the sea monster, goes up and down through. Makes its twilight tolerant. Here's heaven. Okay, heaven's coming down. Coming down. All right, now here you have... here you have the universe as we know it. Here's the earth, and here's the New Jerusalem sitting on top of that dude. And here's the solar system and the planets out here. 36 sextillion light years across those dimensions. And now heaven's come down. God's come down to be a tabernacle with man. Revelation 21. So now we got an earth. At that time, the earth will be the center of the universe. the center of the universe.
The New Jerusalem, the home of the saints,
the bride of Christ.
Israel here, all right? The second Adam came to restore what the first Adam lost. Not only did the first Adam lose his complete image of God, but he lost his privileges and opportunities in the original commission and admonition.
What did he lose? He lost the law. He lost both kingdoms.
He lost the opportunity to replenish the face of the earth. And when he was given that opportunity to replenish the face of the earth, jointly he was given the opportunity to be king, rule and have dominion, right? So he lost all of that. The second Adam came to restore that which he lost. Now the ultimate restoration is going to be seen in the new heaven and the new earth. Alright, so here you go out here. You fill earth up. It's full. I mean, you know, people just keep being born, being born. They're not dying. The curse is removed. There's no pain in childbirth. Populate like rabbits. No disease, no sickness. And no problems like that. Well, what are they going to do? Well, what did the devil try to do prematurely in Genesis chapter 11?
Build a
tower into the heavens. That's what he tried to do. You got it.
That's what he tried to do, you see. Didn't work out. God spoiled it. That's what he tried to do. You
ever think about that?
Oh, I don't have time to get it. I don't have time to get it.
I know. But all of a sudden, we have another Adam pop up out here somewhere in this universe. Now, God's got his plan in full gear by now. I mean, the thing is really in motion. And the thing is populating and populating. Of his kingdom there shall be no end, and the thing is populating. But occasionally you get a liar, and you get a murderer, and you get a this and a that, and all those things, an idolater, a whoremonger, a sorcerer, all those things that are listed there. Because there's always going to be, God will never, never, never operate under any system except free will and volition. He gave Satan the opportunity to fall. Satan said, I will. He lifted up in pride in his own heart. Adam fell. And even though the influence of Satan will not be there in eternity, there is going to be just the idea that, you know, you've got a free will. Someone's going to fall. God is going to have to deal with that. He's going to have to judge that accordingly. And, you know, folks, for all of eternity, evidently, will be cast into the lake of fire. And Jesus referred to that as outer darkness. What happens when this universe is filled up?
God's universe, which is above all that.
I'm sure we can.
Yeah. it seemed like he takes the seed away, and then all of a sudden, one. And then outside of that, it's all the darkness for the original life.
You're talking about things, when you start getting into this, it's just, I short circuit. You know? Nothing can. Can't comprehend. Gary?
No, we did a search of the body of Christ. We knew about it.
You gotta understand this. Evidently, this is there's different kinds of people in eternity. There's you in a resurrected body. You're not gonna be marrying or giving in marriage. You're already married. Amen. You're gonna be in eternity married. You will have gone through a millennium married. Make sense? Everybody got that? Okay, yes. I don't know. Find a scriptural precedent for it. I'll look at it. Yes. Yeah, yeah. I can't help but think that even the millennium is a type of eternity. And the millennium, well, let them have a faithful servant, have that rule over these five cities. Who's going to rule over these five planets in eternity? You know? That's spiritual fruit bearing. This thing, I mean, you know, it gets wild. It gets wild, man. It gets real wild. This thing is filled up. The bottom half of this universe is filled up, and it's growing and growing, and all of a sudden God says, all right, come here. He calls you in, he says, I'm going to go up here and give you these five planets, and I'm going to send you five couples. And we're going to put one on every one of those planets, a regular Garden of Eden. And you are going to rule it, and you're going to call the shots and run the show. Why not? Because you are bone of his bone and flesh of his flesh, and you are joint heirs with Jesus Christ. 1 Corinthians 2:16. You got his mind. Why not? Wild, man, wild. I can't, you know. I got to, you know. It's like the preacher's wife that wrote him a little note just before he went to the pulpit. They hadn't been married all that long, you know. She wrote him a little note. And that's all it said. And just before he preached, he looked at him. Heart fluttered a little. He said, isn't that wonderful? Isn't that great? Afterwards, they went home and did. He said, sweetheart, he said, I want to tell you how much I appreciate the little, just that one little word, kiss, you wrote me. He said, that's not what it meant. He said, what it meant?
What it meant?
He said, keep it simple, stupid. The idea of the thing is, there are some things that you can say for sure. Number one, verse 8 indicates that there are going to be some fallen depravity that has to be dealt with in eternity. It's going to be dealt with. And I'm sure God will deal with it. All right, now, the New Jerusalem coming down, verse 12, 12 keys. Names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel, and on the east three gates, on the north three gates, on the south three gates, west three gates. And the wall of the city had 12 foundations. Let me give you some things about this Jerusalem in outline form, rather than try to work our way through this here quickly. The New Jerusalem is a literal city with incomparable beauty. Obviously, it's not brought about by man's efforts. Built by God. John 14. Number one, it is the light of the glory of God. 21:11. It is the light of the glory of God. I'm just going to give you some descriptions here. Simple, simple thing. Number two, great high walls. 21:12. Great high walls. Jasper is symbolic of the glory of God. Wall indicates full protection for those with God. Number three, 12 gates. 12 gates, guarded by the angels. Number four, 12 foundations. Verse 14, 21:14, the names of the 12 apostles are described there. For what reason? Perhaps as a memorial to their calling and the ministry of Jesus.
You mean the 12 foundations? You mean
foundation is a foundation, you know? Yeah, hard to figure. Four square. 21:15-17. This is a four square city. Now, in our mind, it's been a long time since I took geometry. The city four square is around the world. It's as high as it is wide, as it is long. It's a cube, but really it's... Dr. Ruckman in your text built into this quite a bit. Yeah, it's kind of like this. You know, and imagine that both of these now have got four sides. See? And here's really your fifth side. One, two, the pyramid can have three sides, it can have four sides. You know? Four sides, really five sides. And this thing here, just to show you how big this thing is, let's go down through here. Verse 16, in the city lies four square, and the length is as large as the breadth, and he that measured the city with a reed, 12,000 furlongs, the length and the breadth and the height of it are equal. And he measured the wall thereof, 144 cubits, according to the measure of a man, that is an angel. I just give you an idea of just how big this is. It would be stretched out something like this. It would go from Denver to New Orleans, to Buffalo, to Miami. That's how big that city's going to be, in all directions. I mean, that's a whopper of a city. And I mean that it goes up 1,500 miles. Up 1,500 miles. I mean, they think the Empire State Building is a big deal. They think the Sears Tower is a big deal. This one goes up 1,500 miles. That's how far it goes up. And it's the same distance in every direction. Somebody kind of figured that thing out and said I don't remember this. I think maybe Dr. Ruckman in his text goes through that deal and runs out of X amount of people were saved and died every year during the whole church age, like 100 million people, which is, you know, really probably stretching a lot. For 2,000 years, it's still been 10 huge rooms for every saved person. I mean, this is going to be something else. Beyond your wildest... No wonder when Paul saw it in 2 Corinthians 12, he didn't want to come back. No wonder he was a suicidal maniac from that day forward. I mean, do you ever stop and think about that thing? If you coordinate that thing with the book of Acts, most probably when he, whether it was in the body or out of the body, I cannot tell, except, you know, that deal, it was probably when he was stoned. And what did he do? As soon as he kind of shook himself, they hauled him out of the city, left him for dead, and he got himself revived a little bit, and he turned around, and what did he do? Went back into the city. I mean, either you've got to be suicidal or crazy, one or the other, right? You know, it's like standing up and they shoot you in front of a fire squad and they really don't kill you. They just almost do. And you stand up and say, please do it again. You know, it's that kind of deal. So that's what we're looking at as far as the size of this city. You go down through here, verse 18, 19, 20, 21, it gives you a description as far as the actual appearance of the city, all the precious stones and so on and so forth. Where else can you find these stones? Where else can you find these stones? Breastplate of the high priest. Okay. Verse 21. And the 12 gates were 12 parts. Every several gate was of one pearl. And the street of the city was pure gold, and it was transparent glass. As it were transparent. The gold is so pure, it's transparent glass. Can you imagine a gate that's a solid pearl and all, say, a couple hundred feet high? Big clam, big ocean. Big sea, right?
Enter into it anything that defileth,
Into what? Into the city. Into the city. There might be some defiling things out there around the edge, but they'll be dealt with. They'll be dealt with. And then shall in no wise enter into anything that defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh a lie, but they which are written in the Lamb's book of life. Oh my, I love that. All right, where was I? I was running down to the, let me go back to my list. The city is four square. Precious stone. The light. Just a brief two-word description. No sin. The water of life is there. The tree of life, 22:2, we'll get to that in a second. And no more curse. Okay,